from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning to you. I'm John Sepulveda. We're going to go first to San Bernardino County. There, an international mining company named Omya is looking to buy 70 acres of environmentally sensitive land that is chock full of minerals. The Department of Interior owns the land. They're considering selling it, even though Omya once trespassed and illegally dumped on this land in question. In fact, the sale is being considered because of that trespassing case. There was a question and answer session last night hosted by the Department of Interior, and Ben Perper of KVCR was there. He joins us by the phone from San Bernardino County. Hey, Ben.
Hey, John.
So tell us a little bit about what this actual proposal is.
This is a proposal to sell 70 acres of public land to a company called Omya, which is kind of this multinational mining corporation. The area right now is an area of critical environmental concern. It's kind of a gateway between two sections of the San Bernardino Mountains. And basically, the Bureau of Land Management is proposing to sell it to Omya.
And what would this mining conglomerate do with this land?
They would use it for mining. They would dump as well.
When you say they would dump as well, what do you mean they would dump?
Well, in 2005, they were caught trespassing on this land, and they had a mineral spillage from their mineral operation, from their mining operation. So they would dump that kind of excess waste. They would do it on the land once they own it.
So they would actually, they literally would dump whatever their waste is from their mining operations on this land. Did anyone from the company show up to this public hearing?
Yes, they did. They refused to comment, but they were here. Omya was here.
Now, Ben, the reason we're talking about this is because it seems pretty incredible that a company that was basically busted for trespassing and dumping on federal land would get a chance to essentially lease that land and use it as they see fit. I imagine there must have been some opposition there. We heard that there were going to be at least 120 protesters there. We also know, though, that the weather was very bad. Did those protesters show up?
No, they didn't. There was about five people in the audience besides myself and the staff from the Bureau of Land Management and Omya. So, nope, there weren't many protesters. But the people that were there were pretty upset.
And what did they say?
Yeah, they wanted to know why Omya was being rewarded for dumping on this land. It would make sense that Omya would have to be kicked out or something after the 2005 trespassing. But it turns out that they're going to sell them their 70-acre plot instead. And so people here were really just wondering why that is and why they were getting rewarded for doing something terrible to the land, basically.
At the very least, it's a great irony. Ben Perper of KVCR joining us on location. Ben, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
We're going to move on now. It's been 4 weeks since the deadly campfire swept through parts of Butte County. And for the Butte County Sheriff's Department, there's been no downtime this past month. Here's KQED's Jeremy Siegel.
Butte County is no stranger to evacuations. About a year and a half ago, nearly 200,000 people were forced to flee after the Oroville Dam spillway almost collapsed. But the campfire has been much harder for survivors and first responders. In an interview with KQED, Sheriff Corey Honey said since the fire hit, it's all been a blur.
Honestly, I can't really even believe that it's been 4 weeks. It has gone by in many cases so fast. Lots of long, long days.
Honey says he's worked nonstop overseeing evacuation orders, search and recovery efforts, and endless press conferences. He's proud of the work his department's done, but also says the destruction has taken a toll.
You know, this is an unprecedented event, most destructive fire in the history of the state of California, and regrettably the deadliest fire in the history of the state of California. And I certainly think it weighs on me the fact that we lost anybody.
Many residents have said they received no warning of the blaze, something the county's been criticized for. Honey says his agency will be looking at new ways to alert residents of disasters and says there will be lessons to learn from the campfire. For the California Report, I'm Jeremy Siegel in Chico.
We're going to go now to housing. New houses in California will include solar energy after a state commission approved new building standards in this week. They are the first of their kind in the country, in fact, as KQED's Molly Peterson tells us.
About 15-20% of new single-family homes include solar already. The vote by the Building Standards Commission means almost every new home and apartment will tap into solar in the future. For buildings in the shade, there's an exception. The building industry backs the move. A small solar array might add $8,000 or $9,000 to the upfront cost of building a home. But the state says lower energy bills will offset that. Here's the Natural Resources Defense Council's Pierre Delforge.
There are many options for builders or homeowners that do not require any upfront capital, so that do not increase the cost of the building at all.
Under the new rules, California will demand more efficient windows and better home insulation and encourage less polluting heating systems. Delforge says these other standards are just as important.
Solar is just one of them. It's the one that's getting the most attention.
In 2 years, the state projects new homes will use 50% less energy than homes built today. For the California Report, I'm Molly Peterson.
The federal judge overseeing a PG&E probation agreement is asking the California Attorney General whether the utility might be held criminally liable in the wake of the deadly campfire in Butte County. At least 85 people have died in the fire, and another 6 remain unaccounted for. KQED's Dan Brecke reports.
PG&E is on criminal probation following its conviction in federal court for the 2010 San Bruno pipeline disaster. After reports that PG&E electrical lines might have been involved in starting the campfire, the judge overseeing the utility's probation ordered the company to report its role, if any, in causing the Butte County blaze. Now, U.S. District Court Judge William Alsup is asking the state attorney general's office to weigh in, too. Alsup wants a brief by the end of the year on whether reckless operation or maintenance of PG&E power lines is a crime under state law. For the California Report, I'm Dan Brecke.
We're going to move on now and talk about the Catholic Archdiocese of Los Angeles. It just updated its list of priests accused of sexually abusing children, including one incident that happened as recently as last year. This list came out on Thursday, and it's the first time in 10 years that the Archdiocese has updated it. KPCC's Aaron Schrank has more.
The LA Archdiocese added the names of 54 priests who were accused of child sex abuse since 2008. The complete list now numbers nearly 300 clergy. Heather Banis is Victims Assistance Coordinator for the Archdiocese. She says this update took so long because instead of disclosing the names on their list, officials simply announced allegations at local parishes where the priests served.
And there was a general sense that we need to compile that information and have it all in one place and make it a little more accessible.
She points out most of these 54 cases were recently reported incidents of abuse that happened years ago, and just 2 involved allegations of current misconduct.
And that's a pretty remarkable number. It's really good evidence to us that these policies and procedures are making a significant impact.
But victims' advocates caution that children who are sexually abused don't often report that abuse until years later, so the number of cases may be understated. Attorney Mike Reck is with law firm Jeff Anderson & Associates, which is suing 11 of California's 12 dioceses to release all names of accused priests. Reck says the latest step taken by the L.A. Archdiocese will make kids safer, but the church needs to go much further.
Do the right thing and disclose the documents that show not just the identities of those accused, but the identities of those who covered up the abuse.
The Archdiocese says it will be updating its list of accused priests regularly from now on, instead of waiting 10 years. For the California Report, I'm Aaron Schrank in Los Angeles.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, featuring Listening to Mothers in California, a new survey that reveals what is and isn't working with maternity care in the Golden State, on the web at chcf.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
In late July, the car fire exploded into the outskirts of Redding, moving as a rarely seen fire tornado. Now, researchers say they've been able to pinpoint how this flame vortex formed and grew so quickly. Here's KQED's Daniel Venton.
In the hour leading up to the formation of the vortex, there were winds moving in opposite directions in the atmosphere above the fire. Study co-author Neil LaRoe says, if you think of a highway median separating traffic moving in different directions, that median would be comparable to what's known in meteorology as a shear zone.
And the vortex eventually formed right within that shear zone. And what's really interesting about that is it actually gives us some sense that there's a capacity for a little bit of an early warning on some of these events.
In the vortex that formed, winds reached 143 miles per hour, ripping roofs from houses and pulling down power lines. The car fire destroyed more than 1,000 homes and claimed 8 lives. For the California Report, I'm Danielle Venton.
Well, after a more than three-week delay, Dungeness crab fishermen off the Sonoma coast will begin casting nets this Saturday. They join crabbers from other parts of the coast as the fishery slowly opens up. Delays have plagued California's commercial crab season in recent years. And as KQED's Peter Arcuni reports, a group of fishermen is suing the oil industry for damages related to climate change.
The commercial Dungeness crab season has seen closures to at least parts of the fishery for four straight years. That's due to domoic acid, a dangerous neurotoxin that makes crab unsafe to eat. Fishermen have lost millions of dollars. The toxin is a result of massive algal blooms created by warm ocean temperatures, which scientists say can be exacerbated by climate change. Noah Oppenheim heads the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations.
Dealing with the impact of climate change for a very long time in California commercial fisheries. We need to hold the organizations and companies that cause this problem to account.
The Federation's lawsuit claims the fossil fuel industry knowingly produces greenhouse gases that warm the oceans. Sean Comey, a spokesman for Chevron, one of many oil companies named in the suit, disagrees.
We are working to find real solutions to climate change that we believe are undermined by these lawsuits designed to punish a few companies in one industry who lawfully deliver affordable, reliable energies.
Larry Collins is a crab boat owner in San Francisco. He says that before 2015, he never witnessed a domoic acid incident.
You used to be able to depend on the opening of crab season like clockwork. It sure doesn't feel that way anymore.
Commercial crabbing in California remains closed north of the Sonoma-Mendocino County line. For the California Report, I'm Peter Arcuni.
And this has been the California Report for Friday, December 7th, a production of KQED Public Radio. A quick note for those in Southern California. As you are probably aware, the weather is crazy. That is the technical term. Thunderstorms, flash floods, even snow, which shut down the Grapevine. That, of course, the stretch of highway from Central Valley to Los Angeles on the I-5. Now, snow and Southern California drivers do not seem very compatible. And in fact, there were major shutdowns on the roadways, but it's not just that, the getting around part. There is actually people who need to get out. In parts of Orange County and Riverside County, mandatory evacuation orders have been issued. That's because this deluge of water is coming after fire season, which scorched much of the ground. We're going to keep an eye out for mudslides in Southern California throughout the weekend. In the meantime, just a reminder, our engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, Seal Moeller, and Rob Spate. I'm John Sepulveda. I hope you have a safe weekend.